means a lot. You know, it shows that we've got a good culture there at Beloit, football-wise, and being able to represent that and show that, you know, small towns do matter. And that means a lot to me, you know, that we're doing things right there, and it just allows me to stand out in the state and to show that our coaching staff's there doing their job.
And that is Creighton Johnson of Beloit High School. He'll represent the Beloit Trojans at the Shrine Bowl coming up tomorrow in Topeka. 2 o'clock is kickoff for that one. And Creighton also talks about the opportunity of coming together during these times to play some football.
You know, it shows there's still hope that maybe they will have a regular sports season this year as much as possible. And just the opportunity to be able to play in the Shrine Bowl to get that last game experience, but to be able to play for the reason that the Shrine Bowl is going on, you know, for the Shriners Hospitals and everything like that. I'm just glad that the players could all still come together and their health regulations still allowed us to play this. But there are some regulations, mask-wise, that we have to follow, but it's well worth it being able to do it one last time. Everything's been going pretty good with the team. The thing that I'm the most shocked about is, yeah, everybody's got a lot of football skills, but just the brotherhood that everybody's been able to come together and make with each other. It's like we've been a team for years now, and realistically, we've only had 8 or so practices over the last couple of days, and that's probably the main thing that has shown out to me.
All right, so the 47th Annual Shrine Bowl will take place Summer Sports Complex there in Topeka, and it will be, correction, I said 2 o'clock, I misspoke, 7 o'clock tomorrow evening, 7 p.m. tomorrow evening, 47th Annual Shrine Bowl. Creighton Johnson competing, Dusty, and also we have Smith Center representation.
Yeah, Joel Montgomery of Smith Center had an outstanding season, and he's going to compete there for the West squad tomorrow night. And so we got a couple area athletes that will be represented there. Also, Ian Zimmerman of Republic County is part of the Shrine Bowl this year, and a host of North Central Activities Association players as well. We have a full Mid-Continent League player, excuse me, I should have said. We have a full story posted online at katycountry94.com, and momentarily that will be on nckssports.com as well if you want to read all about the Shrine Bowl coming up for our area athletes on Saturday.
Best of luck to Creighton and Joel tomorrow in Topeka. And it's great that at least there's going to be one football game played.
Yes.
Who knows if we'll have more in the future. Baseball last night. Dusty has the updates on what took place. K18, Beloit Red with a tough, hard-fought loss. That was tough for them, I know. And also, Beloit teams playing each other in Pee-Wee, and Smith Center teams are going to play each other for a championship in Pee-Wee. So lots to cover from last night.
Yes, as Wade said, K18 Beloit Red, just a tough 9-8 loss. Sounded like they played really well, but Clifton got them 9-8. Then Smith Center won over Concordia C&B 13-5 in the other first-round matchup there last night. So semifinals are set here for tonight. All four of these teams have qualified for state in Lucas here coming up later this next week. And then Clay Center against Washington will be the first semifinal, though, this evening. They're at 5:30 at Bill Foreman Field in Beloit. And then the second semifinal, approximately 7:45, will be Clifton against Smith Center, K18 East Regional Tournament. Pee-Wee District Tournament results from last night. District 1 at Concordia, the semis, the Beloit Hornets beat the Beloit Royals 13-9. And then Concordia Chevy Buick won 7-1 over Pike Valley. So tonight's schedule for the finals there, Pee-Wee District and Concordia. Third place matchup has the Beloit Royals against Pike Valley at 6:30. In the championship, the Beloit Hornets will take on Concordia Chevy Buick approximately 8 o'clock this evening. And then District 2 at Smith Center. Smith Center two teams will be playing for the championship, as you just heard moments ago. As, again, it's the Smith Center Warriors won over Osborne 14-3. And the Smith Center Chiefs beat Wakanda 10-0 there last night. So Osborne against Wakanda for third place this evening at 6:30. Smith Center Warriors against the Smith Center Chiefs for the championship approximately 8 o'clock here tonight. The brackets for the tournaments are at nckssports.com. We'll have the district tournament brackets updated here momentarily this morning as well. And then K18 scores and brackets are posted there at nckssports.com.
All right, best of luck to the teams that are still alive and moving on to state, or others that will qualify for state at the different levels that we just went through. The San Diego Padres and the Kansas City Royals have agreed to a three-player trade. And that was agreed to yesterday, a week before Major League Baseball intends to launch its 2020 season. The Royals open up a week from today in Cleveland, we hope, anyway. The Padres send outfielder Franchy Cordero and right-handed pitcher Ronald Bolaños to the Royals in exchange for left-handed reliever Tim Hill. Hill is 30, and he's under team control through 2024. The Padres feel they have a shot. They've got some really young talent. And, of course, you got Eric Hosmer, Manny Machado as well. And they have plenty of guys in the outfield, so that made Cordero expendable. Cordero is just 25. He's had 240 in 273 big league plate appearances. He has the physical components to be a productive player, well above average raw power and speed, and a strong enough arm for right field, but he struggled to make contact. His strikeout rate just short of 39%. And what's interesting is article, CBSSports.com, he figures to see action in center for the Royals alongside some combination of Brett Phillips and Bubba Starling. Did I miss? Did Whit Merrifield get traded? Because that's the Royals starting center fielder, is Whit Merrifield. Apparently, this is what happens with R.J. Anderson and national people. They think Whit's the second baseman.
Probably so, yeah.
Nicky Lopez, the second baseman. Alberto Mondesi is your shortstop. Franco acquired from the Phillies. He's a third baseman. Your first baseman's going to be probably O'Hearn. He comes back from COVID-19. Your catcher, obviously, Salvi.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cam Gallagher probably backing him up, although he has COVID-19. Your left fielder is Alex Gordon. Your right fielder is going to be Hunter Dozier. And your DH is going to be Soler,
yes,
or Dozier-Soler combination. And center field is Whit Merrifield. So to me, what this the Cordero's got to have some options left. So if he it just crowds the outfield, and it also tells me the Royals aren't sold on Bubba Starling or Brett Phillips, and they thought this is a guy that has some potential, so it's worth taking a flyer on, and it got him in this deal. And this other pitcher just adds another arm into their system, although he looks like he's going to be a swingman. He really won't be probably a starting pitcher. So that's fine. Tim Hill really wasn't really part of the future for the Royals anyway. And so they trade him away to San Diego. It's another guy that can play the outfield. The Chiefs, the Royals have plenty of guys that are good defensively with good speed, have a little pop, but strike out a lot. And that's Bubba Starling, and that's Cordero. And Brett Phillips really hasn't had much of a chance, at least not last year, to play. He's outstanding defensively, so is Starling. And it's interesting because in this article by R.J. Anderson, I really wish I could direct text these people. Cordero has a strong enough arm to play right field, but then he says Cordero's going to see action in center. I'm confused. So, okay, he's got a great arm for right, but what about center? Does he have a good arm in center? So you're saying he can play right and center, apparently? And you forgot Whit Merrifield's on the team. All right, good. Good to know. That's what's problem with the national people talking about something they really truly don't know much about.
Yes.
So that's why you've got us, ladies and gentlemen, here on the Sports Ticket. So it's worth a shot, I guess, for the Royals. Well, the Washington, I want to say Redskins, but they aren't the Redskins anymore. They're just Washington. So I guess we got to say the Washington NFL team, which sounds weird to say.
Pat McAfee's saying Washington team name TBDs.
There you go, the TBDs. Be careful how fast you say that. 15 women alleged sexual harassment by members of the Washington National Football League team in a bombshell report. More than a dozen victims detailed several inappropriate experiences they had at Redskins Park. Of course, that'll be renamed as well. And, 15 women and say they were sexually harassed during their time at the club and so forth and so on. And the allegations are included in a time frame over a 13-year span from 2006 to 2019. That's quite the span. Now, I will say this, and this does not make anything right. Not at all. This isn't the only NFL team that has this. I can assure you of that.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say it's not
even. In some capacity, yeah.
There's many other pro sports franchises in all sports, I believe, at least a few in each sport, that have the same type of problem.
I've heard some kind of inside stories about how cheerleaders are treated in the NFL. Because there was one that was my age, but a year younger than me, that was a cheerleader in the NFL from Waukini.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard some stories. I mean, it's not necessarily as bad as what this Redskins thing is. Because I've actually read that story from the Washington Post, and it's not quite as bad as that. But there's some things in there that as I was reading, it's like, yeah, I think I've heard something kind of similar to at least this part of it.
Right.
Like I say, it's not as wide of a scope, and I'm not going to mention the teams, but there's a couple different teams. So, yeah, I've definitely heard about it. It's not the only team. Now, the scope, I don't know, you know.
Former women employees said the first few weeks at Redskins Park also often became with an informal but invaluable orientation administered privately by veteran female employees who warned them to avoid certain people and places at Redskins Park, such as the staircase near the entrance to team headquarters. Lined at the top with transparent plexiglass, the stairs descend from the lobby to the locker room and training area, and someone standing at the bottom can look up the skirt of a woman standing at the top. One former female member of the executive staff learned this lesson early in her tenure. She said when she looked down to see a male trainer two floors down staring right back up, walking step for step with her. He even leaned to get a better angle. He wasn't even trying to hide it. Snyder himself was not accused. Dan Snyder, the owner of the Redskins, or Washington football team, Snyder himself was not accused of acting improperly with women, but they did blame him for an understaffed human resources department and what they viewed as a sophomoric culture of verbal abuse among the top executives that they believe played a role in how those executives treated their employees. Snyder also reportedly routinely belittled top executives. One was a former male cheerleader in college, and Snyder once allegedly ordered him to do cartwheels for their entertainment after an executive staff meeting. One lady said, "I've never been in a more hostile, manipulative, passive-aggressive environment, and I worked in politics," said Julia Payne. Whew, yikes. So there's a lot to the story. You can read more about it there at the Washington Post, or there's excerpts from CBSSports.com. The Redskins now dealing with that right now. In other sports news, the Washington Nationals may be having their home games for the shortened Major League Baseball season in Virginia. That's because they're exploring alternate sites because of local coronavirus protocols that could put the club at a competitive disadvantage under Washington, D.C.'s guidelines. Any individual exposed to COVID-19 must quarantine for 14 days. Per the Post report, the city is unwilling to make exceptions for the Nationals, either for their players or their coaches. Well, to me, I don't think there should be exceptions. I mean,
no.
If you're caring about public safety, there should not be exceptions. And you start doing that, then that's a Pandora's box. So the Nationals aren't the only team facing pandemic-related logistical problems at the local level. The Dodgers are hoping to gain an exception from similar rules. The Blue Jays haven't yet been fully cleared to play at home by Canada's government. And a number of teams, such as the five clubs located in Florida, Texas, Arizona, among other hotbed states, are having to navigate worrisome local coronavirus situations while gearing up to play the 60-game schedule. Factor in the testing snafus experienced across the league, and it can be argued that Major League Baseball would be wise to reconsider starting its season next week. Still, there's no reason to believe the league is wavering in its commitment to playing the season, at least not at this point. So Major League Baseball, the plan is July 23rd is the first game. Mets and Yankees, if I remember that correctly. And then the 24th, a week from today, the Royals would open up their season in Cleveland.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and play... odds maker here. What do you think are the chances, percentage-wise, that Major League Baseball starts their season on July 23rd and gets through the first weekend of the season without having some big snafu or having to shut something down?
Whew, that's tough.
And that's assuming they start. And that's the question I'm asking.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 25%.
That's kind of where I was going to go, 30 maybe.
Mm-hmm. 25% they get through next week, weekend, without any big staff moves and can play. I just don't know how players, like, you know, that are in places that aren't hotbeds, do they really want to go, you know, play in Arizona or Florida or Texas?
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm trying to think the divisions here real quick in my head, trying to come up with a good example in regards to, you know, you got the Texas Rangers and the Houston Astros, they're in the same division. Oh, okay. Well, it would be Seattle, right? Seattle's in that division. Okay. Seattle, I haven't heard that Washington State has a big outbreak. Maybe they do. But do you think the Seattle Mariners are going to be in a big hurry to go play Houston Astros or Texas Rangers in Texas right now? But that's they got to play, got to make a couple trips there during the 60-game season because it's a regional thing. Let's see what other hotbeds here I can look for. Well, I mean, are the Yankees and Red Sox going to be ready to jump on a plane and go to Tampa? How about the Braves? Are they really? How about the Braves? You want to go to D.C. right now, or you want to go to Miami? What else we got here? Well, if you're San Francisco, do you want to go to Arizona?
Yeah.
Colorado, how about the Rockies? You want to go to Arizona and play the Diamondbacks right now? Are there going to be more players that opt out? I mean, surely they know that, hey, we play these teams on the schedule. We know there's hotbeds there of more coronavirus cases. The players, surely are aware of that, aren't they?
I would hope.
Or will it be like a big slap-in-the-face reality when all of a sudden they get on that plane and are like, oh, crap, we really are doing this.
Yeah.
We're flying to Arizona to play the D-bags.
Well, on the flip side of that, I was thinking this the other day. We haven't really talked about it on the show. I mean, real quick, like, the first team that's coming to Kansas City is the Houston Astros for an exhibition, two exhibition games.
Oh, when's
on Monday and Tuesday. They're playing two exhibition games at Kauffman Stadium, and then the Royals are going to St. Louis on Wednesday.
Okay.
And so it's like, you're inviting Houston to Kansas City? Like, what? And I know that they're probably quarantined and away from people, but are they flying privately out of there?
The Royals are having their own informal spring training games. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, they're exhibition games on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. They go to St. Louis, like I said, on Wednesday. And it's just like, that's the team you're inviting to town? Like, Houston, I've been told, is where one of the outbreaks is at right now. So it's like, why are you bringing Houston into Kansas City? Like, that
isn't, right.
And like I say, I mean, they're probably quarantined. They're probably away, and they're doing what they're doing at their facility. You hope, yeah. And so that was kind of the first thing that came to my mind when they announced them exhibition games. I'm like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, I thought we were just doing regular season games and we're going to go. Like,
I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
Okie dokie.
So it's like, I don't know about this, but
it is what it is.
That's another thing. Like, will those happen? You know, like Kansas City be like, I don't know if we want Houston coming in or not.
And yeah, what happens if you play on Monday and then all of a sudden the test and then, you know, 2 days later, Wednesday, before the season's supposed to start, you got a handful of players from both teams with COVID-19.
Yeah.
And you ain't going to start the season on Friday.
No.
So to me, why take the chance?
That's what
I don't get that. I get it because of, you know, trying to.
Well, get yourself ready, but.
Nobody's going to be ready, by the way.
No.
No way. Getting back to our conversation yesterday about Keisha, which I would imagine Monday, Keisha's going to come out with a statement letting everybody know as to, you know, whether or not schools can still have summer workouts, this and that. I expect them to say no, but I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't see how they're going to go against the state, basically. But this is an interesting tweet that's out there from a Chris Parker. I don't know who Chris Parker is. I guess I can click and see if I know more about him. There we go. Chris Parker, Director of Human Resources, Pickens County Schools, former head football coach, athletic director, district AD. Okay, he says, everyone does realize that even if we don't have high school sports, there will be club sports, and people will still go to Home Depot, Target, etc. Stopping high school sports will not have the desired impact. I can't necessarily disagree with that.
No.
No. Now, the thing is, in smaller areas where there maybe aren't many active cases, this could enhance the chances for cases to be more cases out there. You know, at last check, Smith County doesn't have any active cases. I don't know about Osborne County. I haven't checked here in the last 24 hours. Lincoln County had, I believe, one or two. I know talking yesterday with the official Mitchell County, there's 17 active cases Mitchell County, and that could have changed. That was noon yesterday. And here's one thing we need to point out when you look at these active or you look at the cases in the state website, and it even says it if you read the fine print, the state doesn't update these sites with the cases. They update Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and they get the stuff 10:30. It's posted at 12:30. Well, that can change within a couple hours.
Uh-huh.
And they're overwhelmed themselves trying to put all these numbers together. And I still don't know why we need to worry about the running total cases when people have recovered. Let's just focus on the active ones.
Especially if it's taken so long to get everything going.
Exactly.
Just
forget the other ones.
You know, keep track of that for yourself if you need to.
Because the running total is always going to go up.
Yeah.
No matter what. So I know that Mitchell County Health Department, when they're putting out statements, and we're expecting one today, that they say the active cases and then the total cases. But really the total cases mean nothing anymore. I mean, it's basically all you got to worry about is the active ones. And by the way, the active ones, there's going to be a few that are going to become inactive here pretty soon. So then active cases will change again.
Yeah.
So when you say, 17 active cases went to 19. Oh, there's only two new cases. No, what could have happened was four people recovered and now you got six new cases and now it's up to 19 active because it dropped to 13 for a moment. So keep all that in mind. And also keep in mind that the health departments are doing everything they can to keep people updated with information, but it is constantly moving the goalposts and everything else. And on top of all that is they're also trying to do contact tracing investigations and try to notify people that might have been in close contact with people that are positive of COVID-19, and that takes a lot of time. So please be patient with your local health departments, please, and your hospitals, healthcare workers, and professionals and all that. So we shall see what happens high school sports. We know a little bit more perhaps on Monday from Keisha.